Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 478, Science Faction Defiance.
Bring in defiance, bring in defunk. You know what I'm talking about?
Remember when we were going to adopt a small child of color and name them Defiance with like a D apostrophe?
Yes, but that was simply because we were big Deep Space Nine fans.
Oh, I was just a big fan of the little known boy band, Fiance.
Yeah, very little known. Bobby, tell me, how do you know about them now that we're here?
Because I'm down with Defiance.
God. It's such a terrible, terribly long walk to a horrible destination.
Oh, and speaking of a horrible destination, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. Do you remember when you and I started a boy band? And it was a joke,
yes.
Actually, but with you, with a few of our friends, because basically we had a friend of ours' mom who was the bad parent who allowed people to drink at her house.
It turns out when you get 16-year-olds drunk, they just start dancing to NSYNC, even though they have never actually heard NSYNC.
Well, this is how fucking clever we were. We were somebody who were like, we were kids who were like, obviously anti-boy band. We were super homophobic, blah, blah, blah. But we found out it was her birthday, this matriarch's birthday, as we're drinking at her house on a Friday. And she's like at a bar getting drunk and she's going to be home by like midnight. And like, we have till then to come up with a gift. And we're like, well, we didn't buy anything. The stores are closed. What can we do? And we're like, hey,
it was really like a very bad Andrew Lloyd Webber vehicle. Only like the music at the end was utterly terrible.
Well, we realized ultimately she is a mom. And moms, yes, like things their kids get them, as long as there's like thought. And we're like, okay, well, let's choreograph a dance. That's not our thing. We're going to own it. All of us are going to sell it.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the birth of the Backstreet Boys.
Point is, follow your dreams. Anybody can start a boy band. If me and Bobby can do it, anybody can do it.
Oh, and speaking of your dreams, I hope your dreams are getting more of this witty boy band banter, because if so, make sure that when we launch our Patreon this coming September that you sign up, because that will be the only way to get our I Call BS episodes. It will also get you a bunch of cool swag, which I've mentioned before. It will also get you a sneak peek when I finally debut my new podcast, looking at pseudoscience. And if that wasn't all enough, we are going to have a few what we would call one-on-one fan meetups. But because of Corona and the fact that a lot of you guys are in bizarre countries we've never heard of, it'll be like a Zoom meeting one. But we're going to get together and chat with you guys as well. Because I've been talking with a lot of the fans, just like back and forth on email. It always starts with the intro is always the same. Please tell David to start taking I Call BS seriously.
Can I please just see one of those messages?
Can you please get somebody who will appreciate the position that they're given to with this public forum and use it well and stop squandering the audience's time? All that kind of stuff it starts out with. But then we get to chatting, and I've made a lot of friends just with some of the fans and stuff. So I think it'll be fun to actually have some live things where we just hang out with them and chat science stuff. I also want to do one.
Can you give me some names? Because, I mean, like, we have a lot of fans. Can you mention some names specifically?
Oh, sure. I've just said that. Well, I have it listed alphabetically. Hold on.
I will fly to fucking New Zealand and fight.
Hold on. Yes, they're labeled alphabetically. Number one, Aardvark.
A. Anderson Aardvark.
He was pissed. But yeah, we will get together and chat with you guys. I want to do something kind of fun. Those of you guys who have heard our very, very early episodes, we used to have a bit called the Lightning Round, which I really liked because it allowed you to talk about a whole bunch of different science articles quite quickly. But we haven't done it in a while because it's also not super educational. It's just kind of fun. So, like, I haven't really done it in a while. But we're going to start doing live versions of the Lightning Round on our Patreon Zoom meetup. So if you guys have any indication in that, go ahead and sign up to that Patreon when it comes out. But for now, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Article number one, defiance more than IQ determines denialism.
This is a conspiracy theory. Did you basically phrase that in a way so that, let's just say I'm a dumb guy, I've stumbled upon this podcast looking for, just because I Googled Alex Jones, and because Alex Jones is a frequent guest on this show.
Maybe you Googled Ken Ham. He also has made quite a few appearances. Or Jesse the Body Ventura.
Werner Herzog. We offended him.
Yeah, he was kind of the odd man out in the whole science game, wasn't he?
You know what? I think he's a fan of accepting the brutal reality we live in. And our show does that. So, like, let's just say you stumbled upon this podcast. You're somebody looking for Alex Jones. Did you phrase this article this way so that they weren't outright offended? Because you basically just, you know.
No, I thought I was being pretty offensive. I was trying to be. Sorry. I thought
you're talking over their head. Honestly, like, you're talking over their head.
Okay. Well, considering you didn't understand I was being offensive, I think what you're saying is I'm talking over your head.
Are you saying I'm a conspiracy theorist, Bobby? First off, spoken like a true globalist.
Yeah, I am a globe earther, yeah. Well, so this is a European article out of Finland that looked at anti-vaxxers and alternative medicine communities.
First mistake right there. Finland's not real. So I'm using my skeptical mind.
Dude, well, here's what's funny is we were just chatting about this before we started hitting record on the tape thing. We brought up Finland, and I realized that Finland is actually the country that flat earthers think is not real, which is kind of an interesting fact that the science talking about how conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxers, alternative medicine people are not skeptical enough and the problems that they have comes out of the location that they do not believe exists.
Okay, so Finland doesn't...
It's a myth.
Okay. Oh, yes. Obviously, it is a myth. Okay. But, but I mean, the belief that Finland is not real and the belief that the Earth is flat, are they mutually exclusive or not? Because I thought that they were different beliefs, but you're saying that they overlap? I mean, is it because the guy who's stupid enough to believe one will believe the other?
Yeah. Oh, I think the Finland thing is generally a subset of flat earthers. It's like the Catholics to Christianity. There may well be a few people running around who don't believe in Finland, but believe in a globe Earth. But I think most of the anti-Finland people are also flat earthers, though not all flat earthers don't believe in Finland. So, you know.
Is this like there are many states in the Middle East who will not recognize Israel?
Like, no, that's a political thing. They say, like, we don't recognize you as a state. These people actually think Finland is a myth. Like, there's not actually a place there. There's just water. And then when they want to fake pictures, they take pictures in, like, Sweden and just say it's a place called Finland.
Gotcha. Okay. They're not just like boycotting the cold. Listen, unless Finland changes its position on Arctic climate, we are going to have to not recognize it as a state.
We're super against reindeer herding.
And stupid hats. You could say that about any culture and whatever culture is stupid. For us, it's the cowboy hat.
That's true. I think we have a lot of stupid hats. We also have, like, the M'lady hat. You know, there's a lot of stupid hats around here.
Make America Great Again hat. You mean, like, the fedora, is that what you're referring to? Yes, the fedora is a ridiculous hat.
The fedora is a pretty bad one, too. What about the one with the little helicopter on top, right? Nobody looks good in that hat. I don't even know why they make
functional. That allows you flight. That gives you, like, it doesn't look cool. You look like a child. But how come it's only cool for kids to fly?
I had my choice of so many comedians to bring on a science podcast, but I picked the one who thought Inspector Gadget was a documentary.
All I'm saying is that the guy clearly has had advanced robotic surgery, all right? He's a weapon, a government weapon, an asset.
So they basically got together a bunch of parents of, like, young children and asked them if they have recently used alternative medicines in the recent past, asked them about their vaccination history, etc. So this is a survey type thing. And the demographic is parents of young children because they wanted to look at people who are not only looking for alternative medicine for themselves, but their family and their children as well. What they found is that people who tend to react negatively to rules and recommendations have lower trust in medical doctors and a more negative attitude towards vaccines. So this is irrelevant of their education, intelligence, IQ, no matter what. What it is more of a personality issue. There's somebody who inherently feels negative reactions to rules and recommendations. So parents with higher traits of reactance that reacted higher to it also had lower trust in doctors. They had more negative attitudes towards vaccines. They had a higher likelihood of not accepting vaccines for their children and themselves, and a higher likelihood to use alternative treatments that are not included in evidence-based medicine. And all of that is clustered, not necessarily around political ideology or intelligence or even social circles as much as it was around that personality trait. That's really interesting. And not necessarily interesting like aha moment, because this is kind of something that is, you could probably almost guess if you were to try it, but it's still a really important fact to know and to think about.
Now, I think that's what pisses me off, because I accept that there are dumb people, and that dumb people are going to dumb. They're going to believe stupid shit.
Dumb people got it dumb.
You can't stop it, you know? I'd be a fool. It's like holding back the tide. You can't do it. But it's when a smart person holds these beliefs, or like holds these anti-science beliefs. I'm like, no, you have the tools. Like, that makes me want to fight this person.
Now, obviously, here they're looking at anti-vaxxing and alternative medicine, but we can already draw the correlation to the anti-masking movement, which is very big here in the United States. And I'm reminded of a conversation I was having with superfan Dwayne. We were talking back and forth about the utopia that must be New Zealand. They've had a case for 100 days. Like, they all have good health care. And
the water spins that opposite way than it does.
That's not true.
Atmosphere. Plenty of marsupials whose pouches you can just jump in and travel.
God damn it. So I remember talking to Dwayne and being like, man, yeah, it must be great over there. And he's like, yeah, just so you know, the perception of the rest of the world that we have of America right now is that you are basically like children with oppositional defiant disorder. And I thought, God damn, is that so appropriate? Because that's like a psychological condition.
Nobody tells us that. Dwayne's not our real dad. He can't say that.
It's such an appropriate way to put it because it's so true. It's not about an assessment of the situation and, well, my reasonable belief is these masks are bad. It's like, no, somebody is telling me to do something, and be that the big doctor who seems to know everything or the government that's telling me to wear a mask, whatever it is, I'm not going to do it because I don't get told what to do. And that's the issue. It's not reasonability. It's not rationality. It's not the facts of the matter or the danger or whether or not you're hurting or helping somebody else. It's about, I don't want to be told what to do. And goddamn, is it not right to just call that a petty oppositional defiant disorder of a society. And that's kind of what's going on. I think that's why the U.S. has more of a anti-masker problem than anywhere else. I think it's because we as a culture have this inbred in us, this oppositional defiant disorder, this fuck you, you don't tell me what to do. And it doesn't matter if the person telling you what to do is telling you, like, don't touch those high voltage cables. Like, you're going to Frank Grimes it. You're going to touch those fucking cables. And you're going to shock yourself.
The deep cut for Simpsons fans. I think a lot of it is also that in America, America's always had a big, you don't tell me what to do, I'm free. Freedom means I can do whatever I want.
Like, right.
How dare you make me wear a seatbelt?
Right. By the way, also, you know what's not free is like being a knee-jerk 12-year-old that's super susceptible to reverse psychology. Like, anytime a government person tells you to wear a seatbelt, you're not going to wear a seatbelt. Well, then guess what? We're still telling you what to do, you dumb redneck.
That's America. That is literally America. Because being stupid is actually like smiled upon. Like, hey, you're smart. Oh man, let's beat them up. Let's drag them behind a truck. How come there's nobody smart people to help run our city here? Oh man. I think it's also because in America, like the proliferation of different realities, like you can literally find a media source to confirm any bias True. You want. And while this has probably existed in some form all throughout most of American history, I have to believe that with the internet, it's made it a lot worse.
I don't think it has, right? Like, I think our parents' generation grew up watching Walter Cronkite, and there was fucking three channels, and he was the one on, and he told you the news, and it was what it was. And now, you know, now it's so polarized that you have the exact same event told from two different angles, and one is like, Obama gives speech, and the other one is tan suit is a jihadist billboard. You know, like, there is literally a split in not just the facts, but the interpretation of what those facts mean. And I think that is a much more recent thing. And I think that pushes and drives it, because like you said, then people who have that oppositional defiant disorder that wants to say, no, don't tell me what to do, can find a whole bunch of other people online or in media rooms or whatever that also say, hey, don't tell me what to do. And that's their personality.
But I was thinking recently, like, how frustrating it is to be an American just to have a, because I've also worked a lot of blue collar jobs, like the army. I've worked a lot of production jobs, factory jobs, you know, a lot of jobs where I'm with like people who did very poor in high school, let me put it that way. And so I have no shortage of people, friends I consider good people, who just believe ridiculous, stupid shit.
Yeah.
And people who just think like, hey, you know what, there's a, you know, a lot of people are saying a lot of things that's or think that everything is an opinion. So like, hey, Dr. Fauci, what he's saying is an opinion, but so is Alex Jones.
Yes. It's a false equivalency of expertise and opinion.
And I sometimes wonder, like, what if I just moved to a nation where, like, people believed smart people? Where, like, smart people were revered, and, like, would I have the chip on my shoulder? Would I be as angry as I am every day of my life? because one half of the nation is just gaslighting us the whole time, and we just have to, like we have to claim that the emperor wears clothes if we want to live comfortably in America.
Well, you might want to think, like, why would it be that intelligence doesn't guide it? Because you should be smart enough to think your way out of it. But we know from previous research, when it comes to climate denialists, the best climate denialists are highly educated climate denialists. They're still wrong. It's just that they've learned how to argue their wrong points very well and how to convince themselves a lot. And so that goes a long way. Again, personality becomes a much bigger deal. And if your entire personality and your self-identity is based around, leave me alone, nobody tells me what to do, then you have a lot of blind spots for the realities of the world, because you are not seeing reality on reality's terms. You're seeing reality in terms of your oppositional defiant disorder. And so we can fix one of those. I can take anybody into a classroom and teach them something. You can give them knowledge and facts about it, but that's not going to change their personality. And changing personality is incredibly difficult. I mean, you're talking about things that therapists are still working on how to do, especially with certain personality disorders that we simply cannot treat. We have no treatment for it. It is such a harder thing to change than simply knowledge or opinion. Even if you were to change opinion on two or three things, you're not changing that person's underlying personality faults that cause them to have a knee-jerk reaction of no to anyone asking or quote-unquote telling them to do something. So it's something that I've said for a long time, which is I think way more of our world's problems are caused by personality disorders than we let on, be that sociopathy, psychopathy, narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality, like all of that stuff. Way more of our world's problems are caused by that and unaddressed versions of that. And especially in America, just kind of letting people be that way. Like, I feel like the one good thing about totalitarian governments is everyone's like, the asshole like speaks up and he gets shot in the head, right? Like, so unfortunately we have no mechanism to deal with assholes here. They just get to keep being assholes.
I think there has to be like a punisher, but for assholes who like, it's like, and maybe it's like retired MMA fighters who have been like, and like Mike Tyson, like dudes who can destroy people, but are Zen. Like, you know, like they've taken a test, you know, like they understand that they are doing this for justice and their goal is just to emasculate and ruin people's lives. You know, if they show up like, says here, you spit in a waitress's face at Applebee's on Saturday.
But he can't break any bones. He just slaps you around like you're a child, because that's way more disrespectful.
Oh, yeah. He makes you slap yourself. He has your hands like or anything. You know, maybe if you spit in somebody's face, maybe he holds you down and spits in your face. Just like
he does that thing like a bully would do in a movie where he, like, holds you down and farts on your head a bunch.
Yeah. But I mean, like, hey, you know what? If you roughed up somebody, like, let's just say like you roughed up some kid, like you're one of those old guys who punches a kid because he is protesting, you know, like, yeah, maybe Mike Tyson goes up to your door and nutshots you. Like, maybe that's just something that happens.
So the previous studies have shown similar things, not only to conspiracy theorists, but also to other fringe groups, like people like incels. You know, they seem to have common personality disruptions as opposed to issues with IQ or anything else. And
aversion to wet ass pussies.
Some of them do. I believe you missaid the name of the song, Wet Archaeological Pussy, didn't
you? No, god damn it. I I don't know her music library well enough to dispute that.
So does this point to any kind of solutions that we could have for conspiracy theory, alternative medicine, anti-vaxxers? And yeah, it does. One is, I think we need to stop addressing all issues as if people are making fact-based decisions. Because right now, we all pretend, and we know this isn't true, but we all pretend that if we just put the facts out there, or we have a discussion where we discuss the facts, that as long as the facts are there and correct, that all of a sudden the other person is going to change their mind. And we need to start realizing that this isn't a one-to-one. And if you're somebody who makes your decisions based on facts, there's a reason you're not an anti-vaxxer, right? But the other person, the reason they have decided to be an anti-vaxxer is because facts are not what is important in driving their conversation. They might have some importance, but that is not the main thing that's important in driving their decisions. So we need to recognize that. I think the problem is, like, it's not like it's bad to present facts, but it's like it's World War I, and we're used to fighting armies, and all of a sudden there are biplanes, and we haven't accounted for that, and they're dropping bombs on us, and instead of aiming at the biplanes and shooting at them, we just keep shooting at the armies on the ground and wondering why we're blowing up, right? We have to adapt and say that, hey, we have to fight this thing because they're fighting a different way than we are fighting. We're fighting on the ground. They're fighting with planes and bombs.
We need to shoot anti-vaxxers with flat cannons.
Yeah, we need to tie him up like Kim Jong-un did to his uncle and just shoot him with an anti-aircraft
Good
gun.
Lord. Anti-aircraft guns are a savage thing. To do that to a family member is to say it's certainly going to be a closed casket funeral.
Yeah, I think so. Once we, like, address what's actually going on, we can stop arguing about things like chemtrails and face masks being a form of government control and start talking about addressing the underlying personality issues of individuals who are defiant. So instead of going, hey, let's have a long argument about face masks, let's let everybody who has an oppositional defiant disorder announce it to everybody by announcing they don't want face masks, and then let's start dealing with them as if they're somebody with a personality disorder, as opposed to a rational person whom you can argue with. All right, on to article number two. The Sahara hates Asians.
The Sahara's canceled. Done. Sahara, no more Sahara. My trip to the Nile, which I had planned, because, you know...
Not in the Sahara, but okay. I mean, I guess parts of it go through, but I wouldn't imagine you would be in those parts.
You don't know what my travel plans are, Bobby. I am a Bond villain. My job takes me to far reaches of the world. You know what? At least I... You know what? Fuck you. At least I didn't say Amazon. Am I wrong? Is my geography completely wrong? Does the Nile... Nile and this...
Not completely wrong. It's just that, like, the Sahara stopped not quite up where you're not going to be in Alexandria and have it. So it turns out that the birth of the dry Sahara Desert in Africa, like about 6,000 years ago, fucked up the cultures of Southeast Asia for 1,000 years. It's a pretty cool story. So I chose this article. One, it's super underreported. But two, because of all the responses we got to some of the other geography affecting history articles, we talked about how the rise of the Himalayas could have caused the evolution of humankind in Africa by affecting monsoon cycles and stuff like that. We talked about a few of those type of articles, and I keep getting responses from those. I keep getting emails, so I figured I saw this one and we'd do another. So for a long time, the Sahara was not the world's biggest desert, which it is now. Probably everybody out there already knows the Sahara, largest desert in the world, basically takes up most of northern Africa down into central Africa.
Ben Shapiro's preferred climate.
Yes, that's true. And paleontologists.
Paleontologists. Wet ass paleontologist?
No, that's why they call it DPP.
Okay, whatever. I'm not arguing this. I'm not going to give this rumor air. I'm not going to let this fire breathe.
You got that dry paleontological pussy. So the Sahara wasn't always this giant boundary. And by the way, it's like the size of the United States and it's all fucking desert. I don't mean like some of the kind of deserts you've seen where like, oh, look at cactuses. It's like, no, just fucking sand, no water and more sand. So the Sahara is this massive, massive thing that basically separates northern Africa from the rest of Africa. Well, up until recently, it was actually fairly green and lush in many parts. But after the Holocene boundary and a couple of climate fluctuations and whatnot, basically starting around 10,000 years ago and then continuing on, that basically had a desertification of that area and it lost all that foliage and became the world's largest desert. Well, we now think that what happened is as that desert formed, it changed global weather patterns and dramatically affected Southeast Asia thousands of miles away. So how could that have happened and what did we find out?
If a pussy becomes dry in Africa, what is its effect in Asia? That's the age-old question. That's the WAP effect, right?
Yes. Or the DPP effect.
No!
So they actually looked at stalagmites in a cave in Laos that accurately captured atmospheric samples basically for the last 10,000 years or so. So think of stalagmites. You know, that's the one that looks like a stalactite, but it's pointing up. So you have little bits of calcium and minerals dripping from the ceiling of a cave, and it comes down and creates this little mound of encrusted calcium and whatnot. Well, that holds some little bubbles of the atmosphere that get trapped in there. So we can actually see the makeup of the atmosphere and what's in there at any given time by going through these cave stalagmites. Well, in doing that, they found that dust concentrations within the atmosphere were altered. And what they realized is that since plant growth in the Sahara had gone way, way down, airborne dust basically went up into the air because there was nothing rooting the dirt to the ground, and it cooled the Indian Ocean and basically shifted the circulation pattern eastward, causing it to behave kind of like an El Nino does now. It basically led to a large reduction of the monsoon season in Southeast Asia that lasted more than 1,000 years. So again, this is something happening. Before we had something happen in Southeast Asia, we had the Himalaya Mountains affecting Africa, and now we have something in Africa affecting Southeast Asia. This is a time where obviously only you know, 4,000 to 6,000 years ago. This is a time where Southeast Asia is fairly heavily populated. And this had really severe impacts. It caused what we refer to in Southeast Asian archaeology as the missing millennia, where basically between 4,000 and 6,000 or so, there's a lack of archaeological evidence in the interior of Southeast Asia compared to earlier and later portions. So they basically moved out to the coasts, which usually indicate hard living times because you can usually get food resources from the coast, even if you can't plant and farm and stuff. So they had huge disruptions to the monsoon cycle. The solar energy coming in was lower because of the dust in the air. Basically, this formation of a desert in Africa totally changed the weather in Southeast Asia for 1,000 years, so much so that it led to basically a blank spot in the archaeological record. That is so fucking cool.
So what did it do to Southeast Asia? Did it make it just wet and
less wet, so less, you didn't have the same monsoon cycle come through, but also less solar energy coming in. So for plants, you got the double whammy: less energy that grows the plants and less water you need to grow the plants.
See, I'd assumed it made it into the monsoon. Like when I picture like Southeast Asia, like Laos and everything, I just picture a place where it's just perpetually raining. I picture that scene from Forrest Gump where there's even upside down rain.
Yeah. Coming up. Well, they need that. That monsoon cycle is part of their crop growing season. And so when that doesn't happen, then the absence of that is really bad. Very, very, very cool. Love these things where geography affects history, especially in such a huge and significant way that still reverberates thousands of years later. All right, thank you, audience, for joining us for Science Faction 478, where you learned all about how defiance more than IQ determines denialism, and why the Sahara hates Asians. Make sure to come on back later this week for one of your last free I Call BS episodes in Science Faction 479.
Huh. So now the Sahara is known for two things: this and the Matthew McConaughey movie.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.